And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with co-host Auntie Tem, and I'll explain that in a second, Lauren Landis. Late Patty Fink is, we hope she's on dry land. She was swimming after her ship trying to catch up to it for her cruise. We haven't heard whether or not she ever made it to port, got on the ship or not. But and our guest today is former Mayor Pro Tem, and so anything he's pro, we're against.
Very much so.
Uh-huh. The Honorable Chris Luna.
Thank you, David.
It is a pleasure to have you.
It's nice to be here. Of course, I must have been so successful on my last visit mm-hmm. that it only took 20 years to be invited back.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. That has been a very long
that's
time.
That's right. So this is 2015. What are you doing in sometime in February 2035?
I'll pencil you in to be back.
Thank you.
Looking forward to it. Last time Chris was with us was when I go back when we were at the crack house.
Yes. It's been a long time.
Exactly. Beautiful East Dallas.
So what have you been doing since then? Quick. We only have an hour.
Lately I've enjoyed just working. When I was on the city council, that was
Exactly.
That was a full-time job with not full-time pay. Mm-hmm. And so since leaving the council, I've really enjoyed getting back to what I went to school for, which is to be a lawyer, and doing that. And still kind of dabble in some civic and political and nonprofit activities in the city.
Okay, so speaking of civic activities, this is where we ran into each other recently. It's a good thing Patty isn't here. She hates talking about taxes. We're going to talk pensions for a few minutes.
Exactly.
How did you get involved with that? What happened was an IRS ruling came out last year that said because of the Windsor decision that threw out part of the Defense of Marriage Act, the federal government can recognize same-sex marriages, and the big organization that's on our side on this one, our hero, it's the IRS. Which is kind of strange.
Exactly. I'm from the government. I'm here to help you.
Right, so. Right. But the IRS came out with a ruling, and what was the ruling?
The ruling was, after the Windsor case, that if there's a married couple that gets married in a state where marriage is legal, a same-sex couple, and they are in a state that is under a federal pension fund, and federal pension funds are tax-exempt. So when you put your money into the pension fund, you don't pay taxes on it. At the back end, when you take money out, you may have to pay taxes depending on what your tax bracket is. But the other important thing is...
But you're retired by then, so your income is lower.
Exactly. And the other important thing is that the fund itself, as it invests money, it doesn't have to pay taxes on the money it makes. So as the fund grows, it grows tax-free. So that's why the IRS had jurisdiction, if you will, and said... after the Windsor case, if you're a governmental plan that's tax exempt, you have to have spousal benefits that are compliant with Windsor, which is the code for same sex married couples have to get the same benefits as straight married couples.
Now, what benefits weren't they getting?
So the biggest fund for the city, well, the city has two funds. There's the civilian fund, and then the police and fire pension fund. Mm-hmm. So in both the funds, there are survivor benefits. So for a police or firefighter, if he or she is killed in the line of duty or retires and dies, then their spouse continues to get some reduced payment over time. Same thing on the civilian side. And so that was the biggest benefit that was not available. So on the civilian side, if we had gay and lesbian employees that got married and then retired, if the one that had been the city employee passes away, then those benefits would stop. If you were a straight couple and married, then some annuity or legacy payment would continue to that surviving spouse.
Okay, so it seems kind of obvious. The IRS rules you have to give equal benefits to all married couples. What's the problem?
Well, it was interesting because you started, Dave, by saying, how did I get involved? Mm-hmm. So last fall, the pension fund decided to call an election, a citywide election, to change the way that benefits are allotted. And that's when I first got involved. Some senior staff at the city and some city council members said, if this goes to the public, we want to make sure it passes. So I agreed to be the treasurer of a specific purpose PAC to go raise funds and manage the campaign to make sure it passed. Carol Reed and her daughter Laura Reed, who had run all of Ron Kirk's campaigns and the bond campaigns, mm-hmm. came on as pro bono counsel to kind of manage the campaign. Randall White, who has a communications firm and a website firm, agreed to volunteer as well. And so we're going to do this campaign. Well, as we start talking to current employees and city employees and other folks, it was clear that the language of the plan was fine. The way they defined spouse didn't say spouse under state law or spouse of the opposite sex or, you know, as a lot of
it,
the...
It just said your husband or wife.
Exactly. It was gender neutral.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. So then the question became, well, then why do we need to have an election mm-hmm. if the language is fine? And sure enough, in the city code, there's a process for fixing things like that. Either the board could fix it itself, which is kind of what they did in Fort Worth recently. Mm-hmm. They just did it administratively and said, well,
when the IRS said to do it, okay. So
and when the plan says spouse, from now on, spouse means spouse. Doesn't matter if it's same sex spouse or different sex spouse. Mm-hmm. That way. But then there was also a second way in the city code where if you had to comply with federal law, it's a two-step process. The pension fund decides what the language is to come into compliance, sends that over to the city council, and then the city council approves it. And that was the way, as we started talking to everybody, seemed to make the most sense to do, not have a citywide election, which in hindsight was a very wise decision.
What happens if you have a citywide election, the election fails, you're still out of compliance with the IRS?
Yeah.
Exactly. And the flip side is the lawyers for the pension fund were saying, well, the reason why you can't do this is because state law doesn't allow it. Well, the flip side is if the citizens were to vote yes, how does a citizen vote override state law? So it really didn't solve or fix the problem either way.
And doesn't the IRS trump state law anyway?
Absolutely.
What if we decided to vote that, you know, that might be our rate of taxation from the IRS, but all of us voted that we don't want to pay that?
Exactly.
Can we do that?
Yeah, just in
Dallas.
It would be nice, yeah. So that's how nonsensical the whole kind of argument was. Mm-hmm. And exactly, in law school, one of the first things you learn is the supremacy clause, and basically the federal law trumps state law, mm-hmm. and exactly. It's one of those deals where it was very clear, and that was one thing as we talked to lawyers about this, it was kind of a consensus of, well, golly, how can these lawyers be given the advice?
Lawyer.
I think there are other lawyers at that same firm, so, you know, mm-hmm. how can you give this advice that you don't have to come to compliance with federal law? And the really dangerous thing was we were talking about this being a tax-exempt plan. If the IRS determines that you're not in compliance, the nuclear option they can do is say your plan is disqualified, in which case all of those contributions that employees have been making would then be taxable, and all the profits that the fund had been making over the last 70 years would be taxable. I mean, it's almost like the death penalty if the IRS says you're disqualified. And that was the other thing that no one could understand is why would you risk such a heavy result?
Now, the IRS isn't likely to do that first thing out. They'll give them a chance to fix it.
No, that's exactly right. And I think that's what the administrators at the pension fund were saying. They were saying, yeah, we understand legally the IRS could do this, but practically they never would. And so that's why they kind of thought it was a hollow threat, because – yeah, exactly, David. Usually the IRS will send you a deficiency letter and say, here are the areas where you need to fix these things. Mm-hmm. Give them a certain time to fix it, and that's exactly what would happen.
Okay, so what did the pension plan for the general employees of the city of Dallas, what did they end up doing?
So what they did is that they went with the two-step, and this is kind of an instructive thing about politics again. You know, many times if you can give people some political cover, mm-hmm. That's a preferred path. So as we started working on this with some council members and some senior staff at the city, there are two employees, or one's retired rather, John Rogers, and a current employee, Teresa O'Donnell, who were fabulous because they were the face. I mean, they are city employees who and retirees who are well respected, well liked, do a great job, and you can point to them and say, why should they be treated differently than the person in the cube or office next door to them? And so they were the face of it. And so we started working with the pension fund to do this, what we call the two-step process, where the pension fund would adopt the language and then send it to the city council. So that's exactly what happened. The pension fund has two council members on it. Lee Kleinman and Carolyn Davis were superb. And as I told people, I wish they would have videotaped their performance that day. And every new city council member, when he or she is elected, they would have to watch that videotape so that people would understand, this is what a council member does. This is how you do your job, to be passionate and to look out for the citizens and to do what's in the best interest of the city. And they are the unsung heroes. I mean, a lot of people know what they did, but they really led the charge on the pension board to get this done.
Now, on the police and fire pension, I was at that one. You weren't at that one. That was an amazing fight, which we lost. But Lee Kleinman, who sits on both pension boards, again led the charge. And every time a resolution was voted down, he brought up a new one. There were about half a dozen really angry lesbian cops. One of them stood up. She was plain clothes. And as she stood up, she kind of, with her hands pushing her trench coat back a little bit so that you could see the gun. It was a good performance. And another one stood up and said that she only wants protection for her six-month-old child. I said to her afterwards, why didn't you have a big picture of the six-year-old that you could hold up or bring the kid with you? Another one pointed at them all and said, you're telling me you want to wait until July to even begin to act after the Supreme Court makes a decision in the cases that are before it. She said, are you, all of you on this pension board, willing to put your wife's benefits off until then? And before they could even finish hemming and hawing, and Lee said, I like that. I'll make a motion. And Tanel Atkins and Scott Griggs in unison said, I second, which was interesting. I mean, it was just fascinating to see. And they voted it down, voted everything down, voted down even waiting till July. So they basically just voted to do nothing.
Yeah. And the Police and Fire Pension Fund, and I don't think all of you understand this, the language of the fund dictates how it operates and how you can amend it, how you can change it. The Police and Fire Pension Fund is a little different. So the civilian one requires a vote of the citizenry if you're just going to go change something, kind of make a change out of whole cloth. Mm-hmm. The Police and Fire Pension, the only people that have to vote are other beneficiaries. So basically, when they say we're not going to do anything, all they had to do was say, we're going to send this out to our current police and firefighters and let them decide. So it's an easy fix.
There was a problem with that. The chair and co-chair are both up for re-election in 6 weeks. And they kept pointing to Lee and saying, I don't know what your political agenda is here. You have a political agenda, don't you? Lee represents where in far north Dallas? He has no political agenda. He has nothing to gain by this.
Exactly.
You have a political – well, the two of them are up for re-election, so this would have been on the ballot with them.
Ah.
They didn't want this on the ballot.
Right. No, it looks like it goes back to tells you politics is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly. They want to be re-elected to the
– whenever anybody accuses somebody else, you have an agenda. It's like, what's their agenda?
Yeah.
You just have to kind of wonder.
Right.
Yeah. So what will happen with that one? The city pension took about a week. Lee got it on the next agenda. It passed. Very little discussion. Yeah, there were a few questions, but nothing major.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, the pension board adopted it at their board meeting in February, which is the second Tuesday, so I think it was like the 10th. And you're right. The city attorney, when I talked to Warren Ernst, the city attorney, he said, you know, we want this on the agenda as fast as possible. So from that Tuesday, to Friday, which is when the council's addendum comes out. The city attorney, the city manager put it on that agenda, and then it was on the 18th.
First thing in the morning.
Yeah, it was literally the next vote that they could get it on the agenda because there's a 72-hour posting requirement. They got it done.
Right. Nobody in the audience who was there to object to it, which was interesting. There were several people I saw in the audience who I know were opposed to it but didn't speak. But it just passed without a problem. It was there were three no votes. And that was something that I thought was interesting. You were on the council when the first gay and lesbian rights issue came up, and that was non-discrimination for city employees.
Right. As a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting. So it's almost 20 years ago because it was like January 26, 1995, mm-hmm. when we adopted an anti-discrimination ordinance for city employees. So very narrow. I don't know if you remember, the council chambers was packed.
Mm-hmm.
There was an overflow room upstairs. It was packed. Steve Bartlett was the mayor and had to manage the debate and how many people could speak for and how many could speak against. And we were running around counting votes, mm-hmm. because it was the same thing. So that was in January of 95. In May of 95 were the municipal elections. And so a lot of our colleagues were saying, you know, can we wait till after May? You know, I'll vote with you. One of the things that we got during this process, which I really think made the difference there, was a letter from Coretta Scott King,
mm-hmm.
who said, if Martin was alive today, he would be supporting this. He would be asking you to do this. You know, please, this is part of a civil rights struggle.
People shouldn't be discriminated against because
exactly.
of who they are.
Right. And for some of our African-American colleagues, that really made the difference because there were still some African-American churches who were giving some pushback.
Mm-hmm.
But Don Hicks was on the council at that time. Larry Duncan, who represented an African-American district, even though he was Anglo, voted. My memory was, I think it ended up being 8-6. I think somebody walked or was absent.
Oh, that close.
But it was that close.
The vote that we were all shocked by was Mayor Bartlett. I guess he was the last vote, or was he?
The mayor votes last.
And he said, you know, I don't discriminate in my own company. I don't see why the city should discriminate. I vote yes. And I remember Domingo Garcia was sitting at the very end of the horseshoe. I was sitting in the front row. He looked at me. I looked at him. We just went, good.
Yeah.
And we were just shocked on that vote. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. The late Patty Finkel join us next week if they fish her out of the ocean. She's on a cruise or something. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. Our guest today is the Honorable Chris Luna. Do you stay honorable for the rest of your life?
You know, I think until you pass away now. I think my tombstone will say the Honorable Chris Luna.
Huh.
Buried here.
I've
That's
never
awesome.
Called him that. Ever. 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 So I'm just enjoying that. We're just talking a little bit about passing a gay rights, LGBT rights ordinance. We were just talking about in 1995 when the original one passed for the city. It was really, now looking back on it, it's very non-controversial, affected nobody except people who work at the city.
Right. And the other interesting thing was, because the other issue around that time was the Michael England case.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael actually filed her lawsuit in 90.
And which is 25 years ago. Can you believe that?
Exactly. I mean, should be ready for retirement probably now.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about police and fire pitching rights. Should be one of the leaders there probably in for equal rights.
But it's so long ago. He had hair at that time.
That's true. But I don't
but, she was applying to be a Dallas police officer, and at the time the application said, are you breaking any Texas state laws? So if you said no and you were gay,
you were breaking the law.
You were breaking the law. If you said yes, well, we can't hire you because you're breaking the law.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, because at that time, Texas Penal Code 2106.
Right, which is still on the books.
It's still on the books, exactly. And so in 90, I think it was 93, because it was before the 95 ordinance, we had a very public vote on did we appeal. We lost at the trial court, and there was a discussion of do we appeal to the Court of Appeals. And that was another one where, I mean, John Thomas and Mike England and the chambers were packed. And
with the everybody on the opposite side had on these horrible red buttons that said "No Homo Cops."
Yeah, exactly. You bring your point.
Oh wow!
And once again, I mean, you know, down there, and the council actually did vote to appeal. So when you go from there to exactly to this time, where you know two or three people show up, it passes overwhelmingly. It really is amazing how much has changed in 20 to 25 years.
And the thing is, though, this one affects basically no one. No one had a reason to show up other than employees. Even other employees, well, how does this affect my pension? Actuaries found it doesn't.
Exactly.
At all.
Right.
The police and fire even less. So there's no reason to oppose it.
Right.
On any grounds.
But I also tell you what Councilman King said, which was spot on, because as we were developing a strategy to deal with the pension board, a lot of people said, well, that needs to be our lead, is that there's no economic impact. And it's like, wait. That is true, but even if there wasn't economic impact, if you're going to do the right thing and to be fair and to be equitable, even if it does cost you some money, it's still the right thing to do. So you don't want to get in the weeds on the economics, because then it's like, okay, so the next time when there is an economic impact, does that mean we don't do it?
Of course not, because the real question there is, okay, so how many gay people do we want to schedule into our hiring plan so that we can make sure that we can take care of our straight employees?
Exactly. Because right. they're putting in the same amount of money, but getting less benefits.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and the other interesting thing was talk about the strategy at the pension board, and this was something that not a lot of people knew, but very early on, we were prepared for litigation.
Mm-hmm.
We were actually reading the tea leaves that the pension board was not going to approve a change. And so through some relationships that I have, there's a law firm in town called Jones Day. They're a national law firm, have offices everywhere.
They are.
I mean, one of the 800-pound gorillas. And so we had got them to agree to be the pro bono counsel, so it wouldn't cost any money, to sue the pension fund on behalf of John Rogers and Teresa O'Donnell if they said no. So at the pension board meeting where they were deciding, we actually brought the lawyers from Jones Day there. And on many of the one-on-one conversations, when some of the board members said, well, you know, our lawyers are saying if we vote to approve this, we're going to get sued. And I said, I don't know if that's true, but what I do know is if you don't vote to approve it, you're going to get sued. And it's funny you were talking about the lesbians who kind of pulled back her coat to show her guns. That's what I told people. I said, you know, sometimes you actually have to put the gun to someone's head, but sometimes you just have to kind of pull your coat back and just show that you're locked and loaded. And I really think that with the pension board, that made a difference, because I think that they then understood these people are serious. Mm-hmm. They've obtained counsel. They're ready to sue. And we were. I mean, it would have been, you know, a matter of a week or so before the lawsuit would have been filed had they not done the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Why can't we do that? I'm saying we. Why isn't that being done by gay and lesbian employees of the police and fire departments?
I think that's the next step. Mm-hmm. Is whether it's Lambda Legal or whether it's another pro bono law firm. Absolutely. You know, the Resource Center has now sent a letter to the IRS, pointing out the deficiencies. So I think the groundwork has been laid, mm-hmm. and I think that may very well be the next step.
So that's the police department, the fire department, does that not fall under the city of Dallas?
They have their own pension fund.
They have their own pension fund. Some cities have one pension fund
I
for
think
all
the
employees.
Reason for that is regular city employees are not likely to be killed in the line of duty, and in figuring out the actuarial tables, for police and fire, they figure in that one officer or firefighter per whatever is going to be killed in the line of duty. Money is set aside for that so that you're taking care of the family for a longer period. And not that it happens that often, fortunately, but it does. And I bet that's the thinking that goes there in separating it out.
Different rates and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. They are a higher risk population, right, and therefore have to have higher rates. But that's almost why the fact that they're saying, well, let's wait until July, is even more offensive.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the very people that need survivor benefits.
Absolutely.
Because of their job description.
The one with the gun, her point was, you know, you're asking me to wait till July. How about you call, you have an emergency, and my response is, happy to get there in July.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
You know, that was just trying to, she would never do that. You know, these were people who take their jobs extremely seriously, but they just want to know that the city has their backs, that if something were to happen, they don't have to worry, do I need to shoot this person to make sure that I'm safe? Do I take the public's safety first? There's that extra thing there that if you're not sure that your wife or your husband is going to be taken care of, you have to take extra care of yourself,
right,
to make sure that you're there. It's such a stupid strategy for them. I mean, it's just stupid. It in fact, makes everything more dangerous,
right,
as far as,
right,
I see. We want to go on and talk about several other things. On Thursday, Wednesday, a pension court in Austin ruled that the widow of a same-sex partner is entitled to receive pension benefits. So the next day, Sarah Goodfriend and Suzanne Bryan, a lesbian couple who've been together about 30 years in Austin,
mm-hmm,
filed in a Travis County District Court, and because one of them is suffering from ovarian cancer, called it a medical emergency that they be allowed to marry now.
And bypassed a 72-hour waiting period.
Well, not just the judge gave them that,
mm-hmm,
but that it was, they didn't have time to wait for a court ruling in July.
Right.
So the judge agreed. They went to Travis County Courthouse, picked up their license with their court order. Part, like you said, they didn't have to wait the 72 hours. They got married. Having just done the Jewish Music Hour last hour, I should mention the couple's Jewish, married by a rabbi. I just wanted to mention that. Judge was Jewish. I just want to mention, we can be a pain in the neck.
Right. So as expected, our attorney general flipped out.
And, Chris, you can explain how an attorney general cannot know the difference between voiding a license that the state issues and a stay of a court order.
Right.
Because he seemed to not really completely
to
understand
to
the difference
it.
Between the two.
Right. But remember, this is also the same attorney general that's already violated a securities law and got fined and charged. So I'm not sure legal niceties is this attorney general's specialty. But
duly noted.
Yeah, but you're exactly right. And so when a court stays an order, it just stops an order. It doesn't
doesn't go back.
Exactly. That doesn't vitiate or void the underlying action. Now, that may eventually happen, or there may be a separate action, but all that a stay does is says, hey, lower court or lower judge, stop. We're stopping it.
For now.
And so that's all the Supreme Court did was stop that order.
Okay, that order only applied to one couple.
Exactly.
So there was nothing to stop.
Yeah. And many times stays are more for show than for legal effect, because you're right, at that point, the whole purpose of the order had already been effectuated. They already had been married, they'd already filed the certificate back with the Travis County clerk. It was a done deal.
The reason to stay it is so that some judge in Dallas County doesn't say, well, if they could do it in Travis County, and John Warren, our county clerk, has said he wanted to be the first person to issue a marriage license in this, maybe we should issue one of these too. And it stops that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It sends the message of the higher court says, stop doing this until we can sort things out. But it doesn't, like I say, void or wipe out the underlying action or activity
that already happened.
Yeah, that's
in other words, that the marriage license that the lesbian couple has is still valid, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, family law is not my specialty. I will tell you, after talking to people whose it is and reading a fair amount of stuff in legal periodicals, legal journals, I think the consensus is it's valid. And this is kind of a classic case of you can't unring the bell. Once somebody gets married and you file it, how do you un...
And there are all these examples, like they just validated the 500 or so window, they're calling them window marriages, that happened over a day or two in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to get, again, 500 or so window marriages in Arkansas so that those couples can file joint taxes this year.
Right.
Right.
And they did the same thing in California when there was
under
a window with Prop 8.
Mm-hmm.
Gavin Newsom, they started doing some. The court said, these people are married. You can't get unmarried. You get divorced, you know,
right.
but you just can't un...
And also last year, same thing happened in Utah. Interestingly, Utah, and there were several thousand marriages there because it lasted for a couple of weeks, and Utah didn't fight it at all. They just said, you know, federal government wants them to file joint taxes. You can file your state taxes jointly, too. They decided to pick their battles, and that just wasn't one of them.
Exactly.
Yeah, how you fight.
So do you think this recent development will expedite the ruling from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals?
I would hope so. I don't know, but I would hope so.
Yeah.
I think it makes it more relevant and more germane. I will tell you, there were a lot of lawyers who said, the Fifth Circuit is not going to rule in the DeLeon Perry case because the Supreme Court's going to rule in this
right.
summer, blah, blah, blah. And then a bunch of my legal friends said, no. The Fifth Circuit, based upon the oral argument, based upon what all the other circuit courts have done, they would be ahead of the curve and will come out mm-hmm. fairly promptly and fairly quickly with their opinion striking it down. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think this does kind of up the ante a little bit of,
mm-hmm.
okay.
Where's your decision?
Yeah.
Because they've actually taken
answer.
Longer than all the other circuit courts took in making a decision. The average time was 3 to 4 weeks. This one's been 5 or 6 already. Not that that's that long for a circuit court to make a decision. I think one of the reasons the Supreme Court has put off as long as possible taking a case is they wanted to hear from as many circuit courts.
Right.
The only reason I can think of that the circuit court wouldn't want to issue one is if they were going to vote against marriage equality, because no court likes to be overturned. And these are smart guys. All three of them know where the Supreme Court stands on this.
Right. I agree with that, David, but once again, if you read the tea leaves from the oral argument and from other things, that does not appear to be the direction
sure.
that this circuit was going.
I'm just saying that would be the only reason not to. But
right.
to be ahead of the curve and to have the Supreme Court agree with one of your rulings, maybe even quote from one of your rulings,
right.
I think that's one of the things the Supreme Court wants to do is quote from as many circuit courts
because
as they can.
Here's what would be the beauty if they rolled on our side here soon. Of course, they would probably file to have that decision stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Supreme Court has not stayed any of the other rulings.
Right.
So marriage would essentially
and then I
take
lose
place
the bet.
Immediately, right? Yeah, Texas
right.
would not be the last state.
My bet is that
bet.
Texas is going to be 50th.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That if Mississippi holds out for Tuesday morning, we will drag our feet until Tuesday afternoon.
Right. I will tell you a funny side story, David. So you're talking about one writing an opinion that's been quoted by the Supreme Court. My first year of law school, I clerked for a federal judge here in Dallas, and we wrote this opinion. I did the research and did the draft on a bankruptcy provision and did it apply or not apply. The Supreme Court took up a very similar case 2 years later, and in a footnote referenced this case and quoted from the opinion that the judge and I wrote, and that's what my judge always said. He said, this has been the only case that he had ever issued or opinion he ever issued that was then quoted by the Supreme Court. So you're right. Judges do like to be on the right side, and they
sure.
keep track of balls and strikes. And
and they certainly don't like to be overturned. And
right,
that's why
so.
I say they wouldn't want to issue when the issue is going to be decided soon if they know they're not on the right side on that one.
Right.
So we need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis. Our guest is the former Mayor Pro Tem of Dallas, the Honorable Chris Luna.
I'm Michael from UNT, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. We're just talking, pensions and lesbians who insist on getting married and things like that with former city councilman and former mayor pro tem Chris Luna.
Mm-hmm. And
I have one question going back to, we were talking a little bit of history. How the hell did you become mayor pro tem?
You know, it's kind of like Miss Congeniality. I don't know. Just your colleagues.
Is that what it is?
Your colleagues.
They liked you. Liked you.
But I also tell you that back when I was on the council was kind of, as far as I'm concerned, kind of the heyday of some of these LGBT issues. We talked about the Mike England case. We talked about the ordinance in '95. The first time I ran, I did not run as an out candidate. Mm-hmm. Visited with John Thomas and Bruce Monroe and said, "I'm not sure I can win if I'm out." And they said, "Well, as long as you never deny it, that's okay."
But they never vote against us.
Exactly. No. Well, that was, kind of a given. And then Craig McDaniel was for the first, and I give credit.
Craig McDaniel, FOG.
Exactly. I give credit, full credit for that.
Which stands for first openly gay.
So technically, he's the first mayor of openly gay mayor in Texas.
Mayor pro tem.
Not Anise Parker.
Yeah, that'd be a stretch. I'm not sure.
I'm trying to stretch for you.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to stretch, Ron. So and then Craig was on the council, and then Paul Fielding was on the council. So there were three gay council members on the council. And as a matter of fact, every now and then we would vote, the three of us would vote together. Usually no, something would pass, and us three would vote no. And a good friend of mine on the council was Max Wells. And Max would always come over when that would happen and say, "I'm trying to figure out the gay angle." What? And it's like, no, Max, you don't understand. Sometimes there are other issues, whether, I didn't like the vendor or they didn't have enough supplier diversity or Paul, whatever. But just because the three of us vote together doesn't
had
mean.
Had nothing to do with those traffic lights.
Exactly.
Not straight traffic lights that we just didn't like.
So did you ever think about running for mayor, though?
I did, and as I tell people, I think I've still got one good race still in me to do something. But I will also tell you that having served on the council and now being back practicing law full time, I'm just not sure I'm ready to take the pay cut. I really hate saying that because I've enjoyed public service, but I think there's a reason why the last three or four mayors have basically been millionaires. Independently wealthy, it is hard to be mayor and to be a working staff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sense. I mean, it was always meant to be a part-time position and just isn't anymore.
Right.
Can't be.
It is a full-time between constituent services, between going to, represent, at meetings and events. It is a full-time, mm-hmm. a full-time job.
Yeah, but I mean, with mayor particularly.
Oh yeah, but then, in addition to your municipal activities, you layer on, U.S. Conference of Mayors and National League of Cities and mm-hmm. representing the city externally to other constituency groups. No, it is a major deal.
They can do that. Plano.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You people live up in that direction, you people.
Yeah, but I don't live there. Close, but not there. I just think it's interesting what's going on in the city of Dallas. People were just passing for the city employees, not even really fighting for it. And then next door, our neighbors were having trouble.
To put it into context, remember that election we had in November where we had an issue on the ballot to change the city charter mm-hmm. to add sexual orientation and gender identity into the city charter as two protected classes. There were 11 issues on the ballot. That one won by the highest percentage. It won with 77% of the vote. It won every precinct except 8, and those 8 precincts were around Dallas Baptist University, Christ for the Nations Institute, and a trailer park down by Balch Springs. I mean, that was it. Every Republican district across North Dallas voted for it, which says something about Dallas.
Yeah.
We really don't discriminate here. What happens when you just go
when you just drive up the street
bit further?
Yeah, and the other thing about that chart amendment charter amendments, David, was there was one that was voted down.
Yeah. It wasn't just that everything randomly passed.
Exactly. So people were kind of discerning, and the one on
and they all won with different amounts. Very often you'll see those charter amendments, and it'll be 55%, 55.5, 54. You know, it's that tight, just going straight. This was 77 down to 40-something.
Right. Yeah, so I think you're right. The funny thing about Plano, and it was interesting, we were talking about earlier about the citywide vote on the pensions. That was actually before the Plano mm-hmm. brouhaha, but in 2020 hindsight, we can see a scenario where those same people who go from city to city trying to stir up trouble
because they couldn't find bigots in Dallas to organize their anti-campaign here, so they went to Houston and got the same people who helped. Who were fighting the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance?
Exactly, but that's the funny thing. That's that was heading on the Plano deal. So the same people who did the Houston petitions for the Hero Ordinance,
mm-hmm.
And you would think if they've learned nothing by now, it's how to do a proper petition.
Right.
And instead, the same people, the minister group down there comes up here to Plano, once again does a petition drive. And once again, doesn't follow the rules. And the funny
except
thing
this
is,
this time every petition page was discounted.
Yeah.
Every single one, not one single signature was accepted.
We haven't even said it yet, but if you hadn't heard yet, the petition in Plano that's been in the news lately failed.
Petition drive, exactly.
The petition drive has failed. Not only did they get enough signatures or enough valid signatures, there were several other things that needed to be done that they also failed.
Just all kinds of things
yeah.
that they just turned them in wrong.
Yeah.
It's supposed to have the county on there. They didn't put that on there. It's supposed to attach a copy of the ordinance so that the
right.
city knows what it is that you want repealed. They didn't do that. You have to have a description of the ordinance on the petition. Well, what they described simply isn't in this ordinance.
They misrepresented
what the ordinance – it's not just misrepresented. I think there's a lot of latitude.
Exactly. And I think what the city manager and the city attorney in Plano finally said was the way they described it – It wasn't in the ordinance. And so what people were saying is that they're saying, I want to repeal this blue ordinance, and what the ordinance actually said was red. So it wasn't just misrepresenting. It was factually inaccurate. So what the people wanted to repeal didn't exist. They wanted to repeal a blue ordinance.
They wanted to repeal an ordinance that allowed men dressing as women going into ladies' rooms.
That wasn't part of it.
Well, that's what the trans community is
yeah.
up in arms about,
right.
is that they're not included and they have less protections under this ordinance than they had before, with no protection.
Exactly.
So
the whole thing gets bounced. And the interesting thing is in Plano, like a lot of cities, there's a window where if you want to repeal an ordinance, you have to get the petitions and get them in. So that window's closed now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the only thing that might be available to the anti ordinance folks is litigation.
Which I'm sure. Well, here's the interesting thing we didn't mention. The city of Plano, who didn't have to, gave them a chance to correct this.
Correct.
And they still didn't.
And they still didn't.
Yeah, but from what I understand, they corrected some of it. That some of the later petitions omitted the issue related to the restrooms. But all the other defects continued. So they made kind of a half-hearted attempt. But you're right, and Lauren's right. So the interesting thing is the city of Plano, as the petition started coming in, noticed these problems, emailed the people and said, hey, here's what you have to do. Here are the links to the pages in the state law and the city charter to show how to do it properly, and they still.
Mm-hmm.
So there's either two things. Either these people are really slow, or this was all by design to end up in court.
Or do you think they were maybe too egotistical and think, no, we're just doing it right and it's gonna pass? I don't know.
Well, they saw it didn't pass in Houston.
Yeah.
There they got 50,000 signatures. 3,400 of them were found to be valid because their petitions were that badly drawn up. They got 50,000 signatures wrong. But not just that. There was a lot of cheating found. There were things like same handwriting on a whole page. Either that or petition parties, like I'll sign line one, pass it on, you sign line two, give me the next one, I'll sign line one. They didn't even bother mixing up what line they were signing on.
Right. Or pen colors.
Or pen colors, or nothing. Right. Yeah. Nothing. They just, but that's how above the law I think they felt. Mm-hmm. Either that or with the Houston people. Here's the only other thing I can think of. You know, Liberty Institute is based in Plano. You can't sue about it if you haven't tried to recall. Okay, so we'll try to recall. We'll get everybody up in arms about this. Not going to go through. Don't even, just do it, and we'll file a lawsuit. And that's what I think their strategy was. Maybe that's just me thinking people can't be that stubborn and obstinate and say, no, the law doesn't apply to me. You know, oh, you're saying I have to put a county on there? Not on my petitions.
But, you know, if they have any legal ease working on this, then they that would kind of be silly also, because any judge could see they failed set, not just one, but several criteria for this petition to get on the ballot. And would just throw the lawsuit out,
right? And you mentioned the short trip to the courthouse,
yeah.
But you mentioned the Liberty Institute that's now threatened to sue. If I was a lawyer on their staff, or their general counsel has been quoted in a couple of articles, how do they with kind of a straight face say, we did it right, or we did it properly, or.
What would be their argument?
Exactly. But because it wasn't, well, as unless, it wasn't just one defect. It's so many.
Right.
And if you go to court, I don't know how you try to get the judge to.
Yeah.
Well, maybe what you do is you go in and you say, well, this hurts my religious freedom because I have to not discriminate against gay people. And in our religion, we're supposed to, or something. We're supposed to tell people getting married that we don't want their business.
You know, I guess that might work, especially if you're a judge in Alabama.
I mean, what's going on in Alabama is funny. This is my other thing that I'm wondering with the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit might have the opinion already written, and assuming that they're not going to stay it and that the Supreme Court will then not stay it, marriage starts in Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas.
Right.
Watching what's going on in Alabama, which is that county clerks are refusing to issue licenses, are they waiting and saying, you know, Mississippi, Texas, they're going to do the same thing. Let's let it play out in Alabama for a few weeks, see what happens, then we'll issue our ruling. Do you think that could be?
You know, David, that's an interesting theory. I'm not sure the Fifth Circuit would go there. And part of it, once again, what's happening in Alabama with their Supreme Court justice is so out of the legal norm. I think most judges and most lawyers that's such an outlier that I don't see how you give it credence or credibility.
I guess I'm giving another state credit for not being as loony as some people in Texas.
And what we're talking about, what we're talking about for our listeners, one of the Supreme Court justices for Alabama,
the Chief Justice,
said that even if the United States Supreme Court came down with a ruling in favor of marriage equality, that he doesn't have to, nor will he, abide by it.
Because it doesn't apply to him.
It doesn't apply to him.
And then
how does it not apply to him?
Right. And then he sent the letter and order to the county, to the clerks, that said, well, under Alabama law, you're ordered not to issue these, and really caused a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
Some counties have just stopped issuing marriage licenses altogether.
Right.
Yeah,
until they get further guidance or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like I said, even with Texas Attorney General or our Texas Supreme Court, I can't see them doing something like they did in Alabama. Now I can see them trying to pass some nutty laws this legislative session. And there have been some already been introduced.
There have been
this session, but I can't see the Texas Supreme Court saying, "Don't follow the U.S. Supreme Court." Mm-hmm. I just don't see that happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we knew they'd go down. They would go down without a fight. I mean, they're not gonna just okay, whatever. But I just didn't think it'd get this nutty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did.
Yeah,
I thought it would be here.
And part of it, as you'll recall, this is also the judge who. When there was an order to remove the Ten Commandments from a county courthouse, declined to follow federal law.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He was removed.
Exactly. He was removed from office, and then sometime later ran for the chief justice spot and won it. So I really think this is a case of a one-off fellow who
he's an anomaly. I mean,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I guess that's it. Because, and when you want to think about it, in some of the other places, I mean, Oklahoma, you were talking about Utah earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's some other places where marriage equality has come that are fairly conservative, and those judges haven't.
Well,
they haven't.
But here, okay, so a lesbian couple got married on Thursday. We're supposed to have snow. It's very getting cold. It's miserable out.
So when Dallas freezes over,
I was gonna say,
I guess
when Dallas
we'll have
freezes
equality.
Over. Well, Austin didn't freeze over.
No, it didn't. But
so there you go.
But it's the same state.
It is.
That's how it works.
But miles apart.
I just saw the first news account of the Northeast, the blizzards, because of the gays. They're all getting married up in the Northeast. Any state up there at all, you can get married.
Well, and I think Massachusetts was the first marriage equality state,
mm-hmm.
right? So,
it was.
So, and Boston has been very hard hit this storm.
It has
so
been.
That supports your theory, David. That.
Yeah, and I know nothing about that because I sit on the Tornadoes and Hurricanes Committee, and we don't really coordinate any of our work. So, you know, the Blizzard Committee is based somewhere up. It's not in Boston, but it's somewhere up there. And we just don't control that one at all and don't coordinate our efforts to cause chaos and mayhem.
Exactly.
So, you know. So what do you think? How's this going to play out in Plano? I'm planning on going to the city council meeting on Monday just to see what kind of crazies show up.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting because my gut is if they're going to sue, I think they'll do it fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, Mayor Harry LaRosalaire is a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about still some kind of firsts, you know, first African-American mayor of Plano, but it's really a good guy. And I really feel bad for him because, you know, on one hand, you have, you know, the great news of Toyota coming and all the great things that happen in Plano. And a lot of those companies, by the way, have very inclusive policies.
They all do.
Exactly.
I mean, since EDS became part of HP, they all do.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Toyota's coming from California. They have to have it.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's got that on one hand. And the other thing we're talking about planning, you talk about the Liberty Institute, but it also is home to, was it Prestonwood?
Baptist Wood.
Baptist
Wood Church, right?
Pastor Graham's church.
Yes.
I mean that is a mega. I think it's one category of a mega church. I don't know if it's like a mega church.
Mm-hmm. Tens of thousands of people.
Yeah. So you do have some you know hotbeds of very conservative and that sort of thing. I feel bad for Mayor LaRosa because he's trying to balance those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if they're going to sue, they'll do it pretty quickly because, especially if you're going to get any sort of temporary restraining order or injunction, then you have to say, if you don't put this on hold, if you don't enjoin this, people are going to be harmed and injured. And if you wait 6 months or a year to do that,
and you find that nobody in that time has been injured or harmed,
exactly. I mean, it kind of undercuts your case. So I think if they're going to sue, they're going to do it pretty quickly. And it's funny you talk about the council meeting on Monday. I would expect them to show up and threaten the lawsuit on Monday,
mm-hmm.
and then
file it within the next 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes.
No, 2 minutes.
Oh, I was going to say, that brings us right about to the end of the show. Chris.
Thank you so much. It's been great having you back.
It has been nice. But
yeah, once every 20 years is enough, though.
Exactly. And back in the old District 2, uh-huh. where we are
this
here.
This is your old district?
Exactly. And so it's good to be back. I thought I might see Patty today, but I...
We'll find out next week if they left her there. You know, it's difficult because when you're on a plane, they don't issue plane tickets that have your departure time an hour later to make sure you get there on time. And that's what she needs. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly. Chris, really, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.